Hello and welcome to The Love of Cinema, a Picture House podcast, and welcome to the end of the year special. As is tradition on this podcast, we like to look back at what movies have come out, what stayed with us, and what we wish would not stay with us into the next year. And I will not do this alone. I am joined this month, not by guest film critics like we usually have on the show, but some of my beloved colleagues. So on the show today, I'll be joined by Claire Binns. Hello, Claire.
Hello, 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 Sam.
And what do you do for the listeners, Claire? What do you do at Picture House Cinemas?
Well, I'm joint managing director, and that means that I worry a lot.
Chief worrier, joint managing director.
I'm chief worrier and ardent film fan.
Very, very good. Well, thanks for joining us today, Claire. Hopefully nothing to worry about for the next hour or so whilst on this podcast. I'm also joined by my colleague, Carol Mackay. Hello, Carol.
Hello. Hello. No, hello, Sam. Not hello, Carol. Oh, dear. That's a good start.
Hello, Carol. The universal greeting of hello, Carol. And Carol, what do you do at Picture House?
I'm the director of programming. So responsible for what plays at our 26 lovely cinemas.
Oh, very good. So listeners, if you see a film and you love it, that's down to Carol. If you see a film and you hate it, that was someone else.
It's a colleague.
And finally, last but not least, John, welcome to the podcast. Hello, John Perry.
Hello, everyone.
And John, what do you do at Picture House Cinemas?
Well, I try and please Claire. I'm the head of operations. So essentially, I try to make sure that out on the floor that the cinemas are running correctly and efficiently and that we're keeping all of our customers happy whilst making money and being compliant.
Literally keeping the doors open.
Yeah, that's been the hardest thing of 2021.
And that's why I've been worrying.
it's been an unusual year, hasn't it? To say the least. but also a kind of a wild year. So before we get into so the purpose of this really is to talk about some of our favourite films and sort of memories from this year. But it's sort of been a wild year at the box office. I've got the Picture House top 20 films in front of me. We will not go through all of them, but it's really pleasing actually to see that we've ended the year on a bit of a box office high.
Yes, it could have been a lot worse than it turned out to be, I think. Wouldn't you agree, Carol?
Definitely. We also made money with films that have been around for quite a while. So people had waited. Obviously, Bond is the one that we're all thinking of immediately. But for that film to take nearly £100 million when it was about to be released just before the first lockdown is quite something, really. And it's encouraging that people waited and wanted to see it on the cinema screen.
No Time to Die is easily the number one film at Picture House this year. But I think it's become Picture House's highest grossing film of all time, you know, and it opened in the year of the pandemic. So that says something, I think, about the resilience of customers.
It's amazing, Sam. Absolutely amazing that Bond came in and kicked the doors open and people came back. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
But looking through the top sort of films here at Picture House, it's a real mix. We've got Dune in at number two, which is still playing in cinemas. And I think the word of mouth on it is so strong, it will carry on. But then we've got Wes Anderson, you know, something a little bit more arty down there at number three. It always feels like it's a good year when there's a Wes Anderson film at Picture House.
Yeah, and actually, I think Picture House and Wes Anderson are joined together at the hip because whenever we play Wes Anderson, it seems to be associated with us. We do fantastic when we do the seasons of Wes films, and people love to see Wes in our cinemas.
Absolutely. And Carol, we brought back something this year that we are, I guess, sort of known for now, the dog-friendly screening. And The French Dispatch was one of our sort of new release dog-friendly shows, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I mean, it was actually, it wasn't just the Wes aspect. It was the running time as well that played its part in that. But yeah, I mean, I think that's something we'll obviously be trying to bolster for next year as we all find our feet again. But yeah, it was great, The French Dispatch, on every level. But Bond was too long for the dogs. So in fact, all of the films have been too long this year.
I think that's absolutely right. Films are too long, full stop. Yeah. But the Wes Anderson is not too long. And also Wes Anderson benefits from seeing a second time, and in fact I've seen it three times, and I would say it benefits from seeing it three times. It just gets better. It starts off great and it just gets greater.
And then just to do a couple more from this sort of top list, House of Gucci is at number four already. It's only been out for a couple of weeks. This film is playing really, really well, despite the accents in the movie. And then we've got Nomadland as well, the Best Picture winner, which I guess is quite traditionally, you know, that would do well at Picture House. You would hope there. And then we've got a bunch of sort of Marvel films and blockbusters. I think it's been quite a good slate of films, you know, quite a diverse slate.
I mean, I would say about Gucci, people love to see rich people make arses of themselves. And I think that Gucci does that in abundance, that you see all these very rich people who are completely dysfunctional doing horrible things to each other. And how entertaining is that?
Yeah, watching Jared Leto walk in like Mario. Have me in stitches.
Yeah.
I appreciate a good sort of, hammy, overblown performance, and Gucci is a full sandwich, you know. It's quite something, really is quite something. You know, our list is quite different to the main UK list of films. We don't have Paw Patrol, the movie, in our top 20, although it did play quite well at Picture House. But we do have a couple of sort of smaller, more art house friendly films, I suppose. Spencer is in there, The Nest, and The Courier, which is number 9. It's really high on our list. Did that surprise you, Carol?
I think actually most of that money came from Clapham, because we played it for weeks and weeks and weeks. Yes, it did surprise me. It's perfectly fine. It's perfectly okay. But it just was what people wanted at the time, and it just sort of bedded in, really. But I think we were all sort of finding our feet as we came back into business, and it was, with that cast, it was sort of a familiar kind of sort of offer, I think. So it worked well at that particular time. Yes, I was surprised. It's decent, though. It is decent.
Yeah, it feels like it's like a solid movie, but to be in the top 10 of all year, of the year is pretty. It's pretty well. I love being surprised, though, you know, by what the audience respond to. You can have the best reviews in the world or the worst reviews, but the audience do surprise you. Was there anything that played this year, John, that sort of surprised you in terms of how it performed at Picture House?
I think Another Round played pretty well, and I didn't know that much about it when it came out. That surprised me how well that did it. So, well, especially in the London sites.
It was quite a serious film, that one. And films that are not in the English language can go either way. But I think after Parasite, you know, last year, it sort of renewed people's interest in things with subtitles. And I think we've seen that at streaming at home as well, with Squid Game and all that sort of stuff now. Now everybody wants subtitles on everything. all right, so shall we get into it? We've got a couple of questions here. What we want to hear... from you guys is, as people who've been working in the cinema all year and have gone really through the ups and downs of the exhibition sector, is you know, some of your favorite films. So let's go to Claire first of all. Claire, can you tell us what your favorite film of the year is?
Well, we've sort of alluded to it already. It's my favorite film. I've got two favourite films. My favourite film is No Time to Die, because it brought people back, and it brought back real cinema in a joyous way. And I actually went to the Prem with John, and I was so nervous about was it going to be good? Was it going to bring people back? I'd been waiting for almost 2 years, and I just, as soon as the music started and Barbara Broccoli and Michael J. Wilson gave their speech, and it was just a really emotional evening, and people did come back, and it's a great film, and it was just thrilling to feel cinema is back. So that is just one film that will stay with me because of what it meant for a very long time. But another film that I just think disappeared a bit too fast, but I absolutely loved, was The Card Counter, which is, Paul Schrader. It's real pure cinema, Oscar Isaac fantastic, really powerful film. And I just wish it had hung around a bit longer for people to enjoy, because it was, again, terrific cinema. So those would be my two.
Well, that's a good, good double bill there. Two very different films. But I still haven't seen The Card Counter. Desperate to.
Well, there you go, you see. It. It's a marvellous, marvellous film.
Well, I love a bit of Schrader, a bit of Oscar Isaac. Carol, could we go to you? What's your favourite film of the year?
Well, annoyingly, Claire has stolen my thunder, because I had two myself. So, and The Card Counter was one of my two. But my other film was Dune, because I wasn't expecting Dune to be as cinematic. Well, actually, I was. That's a complete lie, because Villeneuve is very cinematic. I think I wasn't expecting to like it, really, based on the David Lynch sort of, which I kind of like, but it's completely all over the shop, isn't it? I wasn't expecting such a sort of operatic, visual and sort of musical sort of triumph, which is Dune. And I think that's what works with Card Counter as well. There's a kind of a synergy with what you're watching and what you're hearing, which is really transportative. Do you know what I mean? It's something, you're just locked into that movie when you're watching it. And Dune and The Card Counter do the same thing, but in completely different ways. And I think Dune is something that should be seen on the big screen. And it was great that we were able to convert that, because Villeneuve's films have been, we did well with Blade Runner 2049 and Sicario, but for us to do as well as we have done was really thrilling, actually. And we're still showing it in our larger screens, just because I want people to just enjoy that. And the amazing sound. You know, it's a long film. You want to be immersed in it. And I it was just, don't watch it on telly. Watch it at the cinema.
I remember when Carol came back from the screening, and I could just see, I mean, Carol was buzzing. Yeah. She was so thrilled and excited. And that's the power of cinema. You don't get that watching something on your TV. And Carol came back and literally was 3 foot in the air. And that's wonderful. It's those moments when you see films like that that just is unlike anything else. It's so, I was enjoying Carol being as excited as she was at seeing that film.
But it's the Oscar Isaac effect as well.
Yeah.
He goes from doing Dune or being Poe Dameron in Star Wars to doing a really small Paul Schrader. And it's just, it was wonderful to see two films so close together at different ends of the spectrum.
I think cinema's about being transported and being immersive, and sometimes it's because of the visual effects, or sometimes it's just because of a great performance. And I think Oscar Isaac delivers that, you know, cinematic performances, whether he's in space or if he's in a casino somewhere, you know. John, over to you. Two hard acts to follow, I think.
Well, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because Bond for me was an incredible shared experience, but it was also a very stressful one, because that was the first time I took out my tuxedo to wear in 3 years and I couldn't fit in it. Sitting next to Claire at that premiere, I thought my trousers are going to pop any second. But yes, it was an amazing, amazing premiere, and I love the film. I love Dune, but none of those are my top three. Now, it's really hard for me to give you a definitive answer, but I did allude to another round earlier. I just love this film. I could watch it once a week. I think it's amazing. Just the relationships, the comedy, the drama, and it, you know, it has a bit of a twist and it can be upsetting. It's just a beautiful film. But I think the one that maybe really struck me as possibly my most favourite is The Sound of Metal, because I watched that in a cinema, and the mix, it was just an incredible experience. Absolutely loved it. So can I have a number one and a number two? I'll go number one, Sound of Metal, number two, Another Round. Is that all right?
That's amazing. Again, you know, like we're...
With a nod to Sundance and Coda, which would be my number three, even though didn't really play in cinemas. Carol, I know I don't want to upset you, but I just love that. Such a wonderful film.
And how wonderful it would have been if it had played in cinemas properly. Yeah.
Well, we did play it at Sundance London, which was very good at Picture House Central there. But two of those films, John, use sound in a really interesting way. I think whilst Claire and Carol have gone for big scale spectacle and the power of Oscar Isaac, of course, sound to design is a really key part of cinema. And there's nothing like it, is there? You know, like a cinema, a film with a great sound design has to be seen in an auditorium.
You can't replicate that. The sound of metal in a cinema, it's unbelievable, the sound mix you've especially in a big auditorium, listening to the sound mix, it's quite incredible. Fair play to them.
And another film with subtitles, for different reasons. Yeah. But again, you know, people were willing. Sometimes you hear complaints from customers like, the subtitles distracted me. But I think people do need to sort of get over that and embrace, you know, the wonderful films that subtitles can bring you.
It surprises me that with subtitles, because I mean, I don't think even once about it. And you either get fixated on it or you just forget about it. And I think really subtitles, if you're not used to seeing films with subtitles, within a minute, you just forget that you're watching a film where you're reading it.
Yeah, your brain does something quite special, I think, and during that time, and you just get lost in the movie.
If it's a good movie.
If it's good. Has to be good. That's a very good point. If you notice things like that, it does mean that you're not enjoying the film.
And again, you know, it's this whole thing. Great cinema is great cinema from whatever country it comes from. And are you going to say that great cinema can only be English language? It's a nonsense. You know, it's like saying great painting can only be, you know, from two countries or whatever. Great cinema is from every country in the world, and it limits you if you don't embrace that.
Bravo. I feel like standing up and clapping, Claire, as you're saying that. Bravo. Bravo, Claire Vince.
I think that's a very valid point there. I think if I was to pick one favourite film this year, it would have subtitles. It would be Drive My Car by Ryusuke Hamaguchi, a 3-hour-long Japanese film, but a really great drama and hugely, hugely immersive. I love that film. It won several prizes. You know, it won the Best Writer at the Cannes Film Festival, and it's been picking up a lot of awards in the States at the moment. So I do hope it sort of punches through maybe for some bigger awards at the Oscars and BAFTAs in international. But that's an amazing film. So do recommend people seek that out if they can spare 3 hours.
Still playing the odd show at Central, at Picture House Central. I agree with you, Sam. When I was compiling my top 10 list, that kept almost creeping in and not quite making it, but it's a remarkable film.
It just stuck with me. I've saw it twice, you know, which is no mean feat to find 6 hours. To...
I wondered why you hadn't been in the office much lately.
Very slow to reply to emails at the moment because of that. And on this podcast, listeners, if you go back through the feed, we actually got an interview with the writer-director, Ryusuke Hamaguchi, as well. And he didn't do a lot of press for that film, so it was a really good get for us. So do listen to that. Okay, we're going to turn the tables on this conversation now, guys. Most disappointing film of the year. Not to say the film is bad, but something that maybe you had hoped and it didn't quite deliver. Carol, I'm going to go to you first for this one.
Be careful now, Carol, because if you are going to say a film from, say, Disney, they may not let us ever show one of their films again.
Well, lucky for them, it is not a Disney film. The film that I was really disappointed with, but I would caveat is also bad, is Still Water, which was the most mind-bending mess of a movie I've seen for quite a long time. So, and I had high expectations because it was Tom McCarthy and we'd, as a company, done pretty well with Spotlight when we'd shown it. But this is quite something. It tonally has, it's all up, you know, all over the place. It's just, you keep thinking it's going to turn into maybe Green Card, and you're like, okay, that's a romance. Yeah, I can go with that. Oh, we're not doing that anymore. Okay. So I don't know whether you've seen it, but it's got many, many hats, Stillwater.
Is that Matt Damon?
It is Matt Damon.
Many hats that don't fit.
Many hats that don't. Yeah, many these sort of trucker caps, I should say. But yeah, it's a film that's undecided on what it wants to be, I think. I was pretty disappointed with that one.
No, I remember that. That was one that got postponed because of the pandemic. So I do remember it sort of waiting a long time for it to come out and then it not quite when it was released. Okay, well, I will not be watching Stillwater. John, how about you?
Well, I think this was 2021, but it might have been at the very beginning of 2021. It's a film that I went to watch and it broke down. It wasn't in one of our cinemas. Before you give me any grief, it wasn't one of ours. And I really didn't want to go back in. But I thought, well, I'll persevere. I'll go back in. And it was truly awful. And that was Wonder Woman 1984. I absolutely hated that film. And I really liked the first Wonder Woman. And I'm not a massive superhero fan, but oh my word, what a mess of a film. Just crazy over the top performances. It just wound me up. So that would be my worst experience. That and possibly Old, which was I never finished. I did actually leave that one.
I loved Old. I thought Old was a hoot. Oh, but Wonder Woman 1984 was a little bit disappointing for me, just because the first one is so good. And I think the second one sort of suffers from trying to put too many elements in. It didn't really know what it wanted to be. So yeah, so that was the tricky second album, I think. Maybe they'll do better on the third one.
Who cares? Sorry.
Over to Claire. Claire, what disappointed you most this year, film-wise?
Well, I've got three.
Oh, God. A tough critic.
I'll be brief, though. I'm a huge, huge musical fan. Absolutely love musicals. And so, but a musical's meant to make you tingle and get you excited and emotional and all of that. And I thought In the Heights just didn't quite get there. So I watched it and I was waiting to be transported and I wasn't. So that's one. The second one is because I admire the director, Pablo Larraine, a lot. And to be honest, people are enjoying the film, Spencer. I just didn't. although I know, you know, people are going and it has its fans and all the rest of it, but I was disappointed with it. And then the last one is a Disney film. It's Cruella, which just seemed to me, what the hell was that all about? You know, it was could have been so amazing, and it just was all style over content. So those were the three that all of them I sort of had high expectations when I went in, and all of them I left the cinema feeling a bit let down.
In the Heights needed half an hour taken out of it. I actually enjoyed that in parts. It was just too long for me.
Everything needs half an hour taken out of it.
Yeah. Except for Pirates, which is only 80 minutes.
Yeah.
But I agree. I mean, the worst thing I think everybody would say on this is films are too long. And a film that is over 2 hours long has to have a damn good reason. And most of the films that are being made don't seem to have a damn good reason. If it's a Dune, fine, but all the rest, don't get it.
Well, Sam's on your side here. Sam's really on your side.
I hear that. I mean, yeah, I mean, I've got a penchant for under 90-minute movies, and we've mentioned a few here. Petit Maman, 72 minutes. Pirates, 84 minutes. Censor came out over summer. I thought it was wonderful, 84 minutes as well. But yeah, no, I think those that's valid criticism. I think when you feel a film's length, something isn't working, you know, whether it's 3 hours or whatever. You know, if it's a good movie like Drive My Car, those 3 hours fly by. If it's a terrible movie, those 3 hours are a lot longer than 3 hours, you know, mentally speaking. Cinema's supposed to be a fun thing. I think if you're there waiting for the film to end, the filmmakers have failed.
Yeah, but definitely. I'm not sure that they see it like that anymore. And but it's a shame because I think a lot of there's a lot of sort of decent films that would be fantastic films if somebody was a bit stricter about what ends up on screen.
Yes, I think so. I think some good tight studio notes to really get people to slim things down. I think my most, I don't know if they're disappointing, but they were really not, my two least favourite cinema experiences this year were both sort of films where they're sort of trying to force a shared universe, because Marvel did that thing so well. Lots of studios are now copying it. So for some reason, I went to watch Space Jam 2, which is really bananas in what they do. It's a kids movie, you know, it's based on the 90s Space Jam, Michael Jordan, Bugs Bunny and everybody. But in this version, they've decided to use the Warner's back catalogue to populate the universe. And that film includes Ken Russell's The Devils. It includes Clockwork Orange. It includes,
Iron Giant. I'm there, Sam. I'm there.
It sounds so much better on paper, though, than when you watch the movie. Like, who is that film for? Who's going to take their kids along to see the Devil's reference in
me.
Space Jam 2? Like, how did that get past the studio? So that was a bit of a mess, I thought. Although, yeah, I'd love to see, if it was a more bombastic director, you know, Gaspar Noé's Space Jam 2 using the Warner's back catalogue. Can you imagine there? And then Free Guy as well, sort of one where Disney are really trying to force this sort of collective experience and the sort of video gamism of films, lots of references to other sort of properties. I just thought it was a bit try hard. Didn't like it. And that one wasn't too long. I think it's just over 2 hours, but it felt like a lifetime to me.
Oh, you see, I like Free Guy.
I like Free Guy. It was fun. I had fun.
Yeah,
I thought it was going to be terrible. And I thought, the kids dragged me along to see that. And I'm not into this at all. This looks too Ryan Reynolds-y, if you know what I mean. And I enjoyed it in a strange way. I thought it was quite good fun.
Yeah, I'm with you, John.
Sorry, Sam.
No, that's fair. That's fair. It's about expectation, isn't it?
Sam, I'm with you.
A split decision.
I didn't know Free Guy would be the most controversial film of this podcast.
Well, also because I'm not a big Ryan Reynolds fan. I always think he does the same old shtick. And so I went in, like John, a bit dubious, but came out convinced.
The interesting thing about Free Guy is it did really, really well at the box office. And I think it's the only original property in that it's not based on a sequel or a comic book or anything in the UK top 10 from 2021. Although it is obviously sort of acknowledging video games and all that sort of business. So there's one good thing going, an original story.
It's also 100 times better than that awful dribble that came out on Netflix the other week. Red Notice, is that what it was called? I turned that off. Ugh. Terrible Ryan Reynolds. The Rock, Ryan Reynolds and Wonder Woman. Terrible. Sorry, Netflix.
Must try harder. So then I'd love to hear something that surprised you this year, something you went into with low expectations, you left the cinema on a high with. Claire, I'm going to start with you.
So back to musicals. The original West Side Story is my one. It's difficult because I've seen so many films, but I suppose if I had a top 10 of all time, West Side Story, the original one, would be in there, even though there's so many things that are wrong about that film, but I absolutely love it. And so when I went to see Spielberg's West Side Story, I was very dubious. I went in as a hard critic, and I came out absolutely convinced. So it was a good surprise. I was knocked out. I absolutely loved it. Rita Moreno was so fantastic in it. On every level, it was a good surprise. And I can only recommend everybody goes and sees it if they want to have a good evening out this Christmas.
Yeah, no, I did. I had exactly the same journey with West Side Story. Loved the original. Was a bit skeptical about it being remade, but was bouncing off the walls at the end of the film. It's a terrific picture. How about you, Carol? What surprised you?
West Side Story, definitely, because I wasn't that interested in the original and I didn't quite like the look of the materials as they would drop in, but was completely in love with it, actually, when I was watching it. And again, that's a long film and at no point do you ever feel bored. And it's very cinematic as well. It's incredible. But the film that I saw that I wasn't expecting to like as much as I did was Paul Andrew Williams' Bull. because I love a revenge film, and this is a revenge film with a twist, and it's a perfect British film in lots of ways. I just think the reviews made it sound like a snuff movie most of the time, which was unfortunate because, yes, it doesn't, it's a bit unflinching at times, but it's not a sort of scare fest. It's a really taut, well-acted, well-made revenge film. And when a revenge film is done properly, they're so satisfying. So I think this was like a kind of Ben Wheatley, but, you know, a kind of Kill List, I suppose, but with a better ending and all of that stuff. And I wasn't expecting it. I think people should watch it because sadly it didn't hang around for very long. But don't be put off by those reviews. It's not as gory as they made it out to be.
Good choice, Carol.
You sold me on that, Carol. I've not seen that.
Oh, you'd love it, John. Yeah, it's great.
It's really terrific.
Speaking of Kill List, it shares a cast member. I think Neil Maskell's in both.
Neil Maskell is brilliant. He's like, and the guy, I forget the actor's name, who plays the kind of heavy dad. They're both petrifying in very understated ways, which is, they don't shout and swear and stomp around, which makes them way more scary. And Neil Maskell is quite something. He was great in Kill List, but this is much better than Kill List in my book.
Very good. Okay, that's a great recommendation. Thanks, Carol. And over to John.
Well, I haven't seen West Side Story because it's our Christmas film that we're all going to see at Christmas time as a family. So I'm going to hold off and watch that with everybody. But the one that surprised me the most, basically because I hadn't heard a lot about it and I just happened to sit in the film because I had some time to spare, was Come On, Come On with Joaquin Phoenix, which I absolutely loved. Caught me by surprise. Yes, it's black and white, but it's a really nice little film. And if you've got kids or you've had kids, I think you might appreciate it because it's a really nice little story and a nice little relationship. And I really love that film. So that's my surprise of the year.
Must be blokes and their children, Carol.
Maybe, maybe. Sorry.
See, I loved that film as well, and I don't have children, but I that was going to be my surprise because I literally saw it at a surprise screening at Picture House. We like to do a monthly surprise film, and which is it's quite fun going into something not knowing what you're going to watch. But when it's something that connects with you, it just feels like it makes the film even like 100 times better. So I went in not knowing what I was about to watch, and then I watched this film, which I loved, and yeah, it just sort of added to the experience. Great soundtrack, amazing performances from Joaquin Phoenix, the little boy.
The little boy's excellent. He's great.
Who's British, and does this amazing American accent throughout the whole film. Yeah, and I had a really great time with that. An amazing soundtrack as well from the chaps from The National.
I think you're right about surprise films because I know going to festivals, and sometimes you go to festivals and you're seeing something you don't really know. It's when you discover a new director, you know, when you go in and you see a film and you don't know the director and you see something and it's really thrilling because it's not something you expect. And I think that absolutely true of a surprise film. You're going in and you haven't got all those bound down by prejudices or views or thoughts about what you're going to see. So I think it's a great way to go in and see a movie.
Fully agree. It's such a surreal experience. Not when you watch anything at home, unless you're really flicking through channels, you know, you can always find out a little bit about it from your TV, you know, and stuff. So like going into a film and just being told what you're going to watch is quite an experience. But yeah, I love that we do those. My favourite way to watch a film.
If it's a good one.
If it's a good one. Well, I guess if it's not a good film, then your brain starts doing even more work. Like, oh, what are they doing? What's going on here? Why am I watching this?
I ended up at a surprise screening many, many years ago at the London Film Festival for The River Wild, and I was absolutely gutted because that was terrible.
Oh, come on. Meryl Streep on a raft.
No,
what are you talking about?
The director was sat behind me, and at the end of the film, he turned around between me and my mate, and he said, "What do you think?" And I said, "It was terrible." And he went, "Oh, my name's Curtis. I'm the director." I'm like, "Oh, I'm really sorry." but it was a bit rubbish.
Do you think he listened to you, John?
He's never worked again, Carol. That's it.
Okay, we're going to move on to our next section now. We're going to try and keep you on your best behaviour. Really challenging time for exhibition this year, and you know, we've opened the cinemas, closed the cinemas, opened the cinemas, closed the cinemas. You know, things that we've never had to do during our careers at Picture House. But what was your personal biggest learnings from this time? Because I think, for me personally, I've got this new appreciation for going to the movies, but also for people who go out and do that. Because, you know, when it's taken away from you, you realise how much you miss it. So I feel like whilst it's been hard, I'm a better person for it. And I'd love to hear what you think, starting with John, first of all.
I agree with you. I think we all miss going. It's just really not having that sort of immersive shared experience that you're used to. And when it comes back, when you get the right film. So Bond, when we went to the premiere of Bond, it was a riot, really, because everybody was cheering and clapping. And you know, you could feel the energy in the screen and that. I really missed that, and it was so nice to have that back. Yeah, but I guess it was really hard for me as an operator with all of the changes that went on over the last sort of 18 months. You know, we became very good at being reactive. Let me tell you, all the planning that you do just went out the window. So it seems to be there was a bit of stability back when Bond came, which was nice to see, I guess.
No, absolutely. How about you, Carol?
I mean, like John said, it's been so difficult. I think there's a lack of understanding, possibly, just, you know, how difficult it is to open a building and have staff that are well and able to, you know, operate the film for you in the first place. There was, you know, a clog up of supply. You know, we had old films, we had little films, we didn't have films anymore that we would have had pre-COVID. I think we also had a part of our audience that didn't come back, and we had to react to that as well. So I think we've done pretty amazing, actually, to get anything up on screen and keep people interested. I think the media have not been great. They've not supported cinema. I'm sick and tired of reading about how it's the end of cinema. It's just rubbish. How can a film do £100 million and that's the end of cinema? Bond would have done that pre-COVID. That's what a Bond would do. And it still happened without quite a few people not joining in. So I think we're still learning. I'm not quite sure that people come to the films that I would like people to enjoy. I think maybe some of them are a bit too popcorny at the moment, but I think that will settle down. I think as the supply chain unclogs, we'll start to see a bit of variety again. I'm just grateful to be able to, I think I thought a bit like John did as well. I mean, I've been actually gone to the theatre a lot since they've reopened, because I took that for granted. It was something that I could always do, and therefore I never did it. And then when it was taken away from me, I thought, I'm never doing this again. And I've been 3 times so far this year. And it's really, really joyous sitting with other people enjoying a piece of entertainment or arts.
I was walking around cinemas during the closure, where we had freezing cold auditoriums with nobody in them, and it was like really, really weird. You know, we're used to walking around these buildings with people in, having fun, enjoying themselves, and then you're in this closed, cold building. It was surreal.
Yeah, I fully agree. It was when I visited some of the closed cinemas, it's just really sad.
It's like going to the beach in the winter, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's just not quite right.
Yeah, something's not right about this picture. And how about you, Claire? You said you're at the top, your job is chief worrier.
Well, I think the thing that I've really appreciated, all the people that I work with, all the people that do the jobs in the film industry, all the people that are committed to film and cinemas, and feeling immensely proud to be a part of that community. And my colleagues have stuck with it in very difficult circumstances. So that has made me feel quite sort of, and it sounds pathetic, but it does make me feel a bit humble about that. But I, like Carol, I really appreciate being able to go to the cinema. And since the cinemas have been open, I'm going to the cinema all the time. When I saw West Side Story for the second time last night, there was only about 30 people in the audience. And at the end, there was a slight smattering of applause, just a few people putting their hands together. And the chatter when I came out was all incredibly enthusiastic. And it was just, I felt wonderful that we're back. So that's what I'd say, really.
No, that's fantastic. I do think it's often with musicals, I find, people feel like they might need to do an applause at the end. I remember watching The Greatest Showman at Clapham Picture House, just a regular Tuesday afternoon screening, and that got a big round of applause. And like, Hugh Jackman can't hear you, but I just love that people love the film so much they do want to applaud it and they feel compelled to.
Unless you're doing outdoor screenings and you've put it on 50 times and you're hearing the same songs, you don't want to applaud by the 50th showing.
Okay, so we're just sort of coming to the end of this podcast now. We've looked back, we've been reflective on 2021 and you know, what a wild year it's been for cinema. We're going into 2022 now. Hopefully things looking, you know, more positive. I'd love to know what you personally would recommend people watch. We're coming up to Christmas as we record. This is sort of traditionally the time where lots of really amazing films come out. We're just sitting slightly ahead of the Oscars and BAFTA awards. What would you recommend people watch over their Christmas holidays at the cinema? I'm going to start with Claire.
Well, now I'm going to get pumped and excited now because I'm absolutely beside myself to see it again, is Paul Thomas Anderson's Licorice Pizza, which plays previews from the 26th of December. We've got it in 70mm at Central, and we've got a couple of 35mm as well. The film is absolutely wonderful. It's a small film for him. It's a sort of romantic first love film, but it's absolutely wonderful. And then the other opposite extreme is a body horror, Julia
Ducanau.
Thank you. Titan, which won the Palme d'Or in Cannes. And that is the sort of opposite end of the spectrum. But again, I saw that in Cannes at 8:30 in the morning. And it absolutely blew my mind. And I think it'll blow anyone's mind. It's so bold. It's so ferocious. It's so exciting. You must go and see it in the cinema. So those are two I'd recommend.
Oh, wow. I've seen Titan. I loved it. I haven't seen Licorice Pizza yet, but it's on my list. I'll be there Boxing Day watching it at Picture Central. That sounds like a great thing to do. How about you, John? What should people watch over Christmas?
I had the same too as Claire. I've got one more that's probably going to step on Carol's toe that I really want to toes, not just toe, would be Parallel Mothers, because I like a bit of Almodovar, to be honest. So that one is on our Christmas programme, which is playing when, Carol? You'll be able to tell
Boxing
us.
Boxing Day at all 26 picture houses.
But I am looking forward to both those other two, Licorice Pizza and Titan, or Titan, as I've been calling it. But yeah, so those would be my three.
And how about you, Carol? What should people watch whilst they're on the holidays?
When you're on your holidays, go and see West Side Story because you won't regret it. Even though you think you don't need to see it, you do.
Yes, they do.
You do. And then it is Parallel Mothers, which is coming out at the end of January, but obviously we're doing the preview. And it's probably one of my favourite Almodovars for the last sort of 10 years, and Licorice Pizza, they totally deliver and will make you feel great. So the fact that we've got them, Licorice Pizza and Celluloid, at three sites is quite something. We've got the only 70mm print at Central and the 35mm prints at Duke of York's in Brighton and the Ritzy Brixton, and then it will be at most of our cinemas on the 1st of January. So So they would be my key ones over Christmas. But then there's loads to look forward to in the first quarter. I've really got my eye on Nightmare Alley. That's the one I can't wait for. I mean, the original is so effed up. I can't wait to see what Del Toro's done with it.
Oh, nice. Yeah, no, I love Guillermo Del Toro. It feels like it's been such a long time since his last film. I guess 2018, Shape of Water. So yeah, we're due a new Del Toro. I'll be there day one. Okay, well that answers my next question. Actually, what you're looking forward to next year? So Carol's down for Nightmare Alley. You're in the queue already for that one. Claire, what are you looking forward to watching in 2022?
Well, our own film, Souvenir, Joanna Hogg, Souvenir 2, I think people are going to be really excited to see what I think is Joanna Hogg's greatest film. And I think it does put her up there in a real position of being one of the directors, not just a great British director, but a great director of the world. So Souvenir 2 is really up there for me, and I've seen it a couple of times, but I just think people are going to be thrilled when they see it. Such an intelligent, funny, it's just a brilliant experience. So even though it's a Pitch House Entertainment film, I can recommend it thoroughly.
Very biased, but a very good film, absolutely. And and what a cast as well. You know, anything with Tilda Swinton in it makes me interested. But her and her daughter acting opposite each other on a Swinburne in Souvenir and Souvenir 2 is a sight to behold.
Exactly. And Richard Ayoade steals the scenes he's in. So there's just some great moments in it.
That film's got some really good dog scenes in, so I do hope we'll do some dog-friendly screenings.
We must, and I know how John loves it when we do the dog-friendly screens.
I love a good dog screening, me. As a cat person, I love a good dog screening.
And what are you looking forward to, aside from the dog-friendly screenings, John, in 2022?
There's some good films in 2022, and there's a couple that are tickling my fancy where I've seen a bit of footage, and I'm like, ooh, I like the look of that. First one is an obvious one for me. It's The Batman. Just because I want to see what Patterson's like as Batman, I'm not 100% sold, but then I've seen some footage, and it looks pretty dark and mean and nasty, and I'm like, ooh, this could be okay, you know. And then Baz Luhrmann's the Elvis movie, I can't wait to see how that comes out, because again, Tom Hanks as Colonel Parker looks amazing. I don't know who the young Elvis is, but I'm like, yeah, I'm into this. And then the last one would be Olivia Wilde's new film, Don't Worry Darling, which I really like the look of that, so fingers crossed that works out. But my biggest one that I really want to see, and I know I've just done three and I'm now doing four, is Tom Cruise is back as Maverick. Come on, let's get him in that plane and get him in the sky and let's see what he can do as a 60-year-old or whatever he is.
Oh, no, I mean, that's a bit like No Time to Die. That's been one of the sort of pandemic films that's been moved around, but it looks very cinematic. I've seen that trailer quite a lot because of the move, and it's still exciting, you know, even seeing that same trailer now.
It's just that music at the start, isn't it? Dun-dun, you know, that music gets the hairs on the back of your neck.
Oh, that's a good some good picks there. I think I mean on Tom Cruise, I'm really excited for Mission Impossible 7. I loved what they did with number 6, and I want to see how they're going to top that. But recently we saw, I don't know if you guys have seen it, there's a new trailer for Into the Spider-Verse 2, Across the Spider-Verse.
I've seen that trailer.
And
yeah, it looks
Into
great.
The Spider-Verse was one of my favorite superhero films ever, and a sequel comes out next Christmas. So I'm already excited
Part
for
one,
that.
Isn't it?
And
Part
Avatar.
One.
Goodness yeah. me, what are we going to do? It's too much.
There is a new Dave Eggers next year, a Viking revenge film, just saying.
From the director of The Lighthouse, yeah.
The Northmen. It's going to be great, isn't it?
I'm excited. I mean, next year is looking, is shaping up to be, on paper, it looks really, really exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing lots of these films, and I'm looking forward to talking about them on this very podcast. Well, I think that brings us to a close today, guys. But thanks so much for giving up your time and for, you know, talking about movies, reflecting on this year and looking forward to next year. And hopefully we'll see you on the show in the future as well. It'd be nice to have you back on.
No problem.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So big thank you to Claire, Carol and John for joining us on the show. And thank you for listening. As ever, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate and review on your podcast app of choice. If you didn't enjoy it, that's fine. Don't do any of those things. This podcast was produced by Strip Media, and a huge thank you to Kobe Yamanaka for everything this year. And the show is edited by Maddie Searle. You can find all the latest listings at picturehouses.com, and please follow us on social media at picturehouses.